from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. 5 DFW locations with North Frisco, Eldorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Here we go. It's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3. The Fan, Tim Cato of The Athletic, joins us now to talk about this massive Mavs offseason. And a good afternoon, Tim. How the heck are you? Oh, not... Tim, you there? Was that? Not yet? He's on Zoom. Okay.
He's on the Zoom.
Going to jump over here on the Zoom and talk with Tim Cato. How the heck are you, Tim?
I think he's still waiting for us. He's kind of looking at us like he's waiting for us to talk.
He said, right, can't hear anything, by the way, in the chatty chat.
We'll get him dialed in just a second. I think the biggest question has to be, what are we doing with Derrick Jones Jr.? You know, is this realistic? Or, you know, do you have to consider other options? And if you're into considering other options, not able to keep Derrick Jones Jr., then, you know, how likely is it that you could actually come back with a better team? As Tim joins us now here on 105.3 The Fan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. It's officially the end of the season now that I'm doing my final interview with you guys. So
it is.
Wasn't over until this happened.
It is, and what a glorious run. Shouldn't we start there, just how, you know, much plans came together and how good we can feel about where things are going in general, right?
I think he's struggling to hear us.
You got us, Tim?
I got us. Got you now.
Okay.
All right. Tim Cato here with you on the Fan. We're gonna have to do something about that. Thank you, sir. All right, so let's start with the Derrick Jones Jr. question. The idea of him being able to come back, how realistic is that? How much would the Mavs have to move things around in order to get that done?
Oh, he lost us again.
That's weird. Right. We've been doing this on the Zoom how many times now?
Yeah, that's a strange one. I've never experienced that.
We can
myself.
Call him. We can give him a call on the phone.
Yeah, we'll give him a call. Okay.
I'll pass along the digits.
I do consider the Derrick Jones Jr. a question, you know, the first big one that you have to get to, and I think his presence was massively important. You know, you got Lively, you got Washington. You know, huge to have those guys. Huge to have Gafford as well. But I don't think you get this far without Derrick Jones Jr., and that's my first priority as this offseason starts. Can we have him back, Tim? What do you say?
I think I'm good now. I see the audio coming through the right panel on the Zoom and the one I'm used to. So
yeah, we got you.
Now you sound perfect. No echo or anything.
Let's actually launch into this.
Right on. Yeah, okay, so... How tough is it going to be to bring back Derrick Jones Jr.?
Oh, man. I mean, I think that's obviously a big question. I can tell you right now that Dallas has certainly looked into contingency plans, that there are names that, they have in mind. But I think the goal is to bring him back. I think that if they, you know, I don't know what his valuation is. Obviously, he was not as effective against Boston as he has been throughout these playoffs and, you know, regular season. He's still someone important for the regular season. He's still someone who was effective against most teams in the postseason. Boston is a opponent that makes you look bad. And, you know, dictating roster decisions based off one series, one opponent that has this unique ability to punish weaknesses is probably not the way to go. I believe Dallas wants him back. It's just a matter of price. And in all likelihood, it will take the team getting rid of Tim Hardaway Jr.'s salary and opening up at least most or a big chunk of, you know, what they call the non-taxpayers mid-level exception. And to do that, you know, you've got to move some money off. Even if you were to, you know, there's a lot of options, but I think it really focuses around Tim Hardaway's contract as something that would need to be moved. And so that's step one for Dallas. And then step two is figuring out what price it would take to re-sign Derek Jones Jr. But I still think it's probably likelier than not that all of that happens and Derek Jones Jr. is back in Dallas.
Okay. And how difficult is it, to move Tim Hardaway Jr.'s deal? How clear is that part of the equation?
I mean, I thought I was surprised. I've been surprised he didn't have, you know, he basically had no value even last summer. Mm. You know, I thought a shooter, you know, even with 2 years left on his deal, but the money was declining. I thought he would have some value. Very clearly, he did not. Dallas did not expect him to be on the roster going into the season. Neither did Tim Hardaway Jr., quite frankly, at Media Day. You know, I remember he said something to the effect of, I wasn't sure I was going to be here. Mm. And after the second half of a season, I think whatever non-value he had has diminished. And so it's going to take Dallas packaging him for something or somebody. It's going to, you know, take some sort of positive value to move on from, you know, the negative valuation that he has around the league. I think it's doable. You know, it's something I'm going to start thinking about more about, like how they could actually go about, you know, figuring this out. You know, maybe it's a bad contract for a bad contract and, you know, but that bad contract, whoever you're bringing back, is someone more useful to the team. But that's a big question. There's always the option of waiving him, and you can waive him over multiple years. I don't think Dallas wants to do that by any means. But, you know, there are nuclear options. That's not even really a nuclear option. But, you know, there are ways Dallas can get his money off the books if they have to, even without a trade partner, to kind of facilitate this Derek Jones Jr. Signing, if that's what they pursue. It just is much easier if they can find a way, a trade partner for him.
Tim, after watching the way these finals unfolded, and obviously from a Mavs standpoint, you're not just focusing on building your team to beat Boston. It's hard to get to the finals. It's hard to run through the juggernaut that is the West. But how big of a gap is there, and what are some areas that you think they really need to look at addressing to get back to where they were and try and win it a year from now?
Yeah, you could go any different number of ways. I mean, it's you know, there's definitely would be value in having a third scorer, a third creator, someone who does what, you know, kind of what Dante Exum did throughout the month of December. You know, I think the offense missed him, but he also might not be good enough for this, you know, the final stage, you know, that level of shot creation. Certainly even earlier in the postseason, he looked a little bit overwhelmed. And so are you able to find some sort of point guard, some sort of, you know, third ball handler who can create a little bit? Is there more shooting to be put on this roster, either from the bench or, you know, in place of the Derek Jones Jr. starting spot? You know, there's internal development for Derek Lively. That's always obviously going to help. There is, you know, hopefully, if you want to call it internal development, but I think Luka Doncic, you know, in a healthy Luka Doncic who's, you know, preparing for a 100-game season, not just an 82-game one. You know, that's something that obviously is notable to the team, is something that could help them in a postseason run. You know, maybe the idea is, you know, and I'll probably leave it here, but maybe the idea is that you go get a big man who can score. I had someone float the idea of Vucevic, and we're talking about bad contracts, and you know, maybe there's a Tim Hardaway, Vucevic deal with Chicago. It's not that Vucevic is going to be a big part of your rotation in the, you know, in the postseason, but he's somebody who you can bring in. And during the regular season, if he's coming off the bench, your offense becomes a little bit less heliocentric around these two superstar ball handlers, and he wins you some bench minutes. And it's just another place for your offense to go, so that not only are you asking Luka to prep for a 100-game season, but you're also bringing in somebody who, you know, not every single time down the court the offense has to run through him in the pick and rolls. And so I kind of like that idea, but that was just floated to me by, you know, not sourced or anything, just kind of an idea that, you know, I heard, and I was like, that makes a little bit of sense. So a lot of options, and ultimately, you know, the players who played in the finals, you know, the core is mostly, for the most part, that's who needs to be better. But, you know, there's certainly ways to improve this team a little bit as well.
Tim, man, I'm going to go a couple different ways here, but I'll ask this question. With Mark Cuban going one way and Nico Harrison this way towards it, where's the changes going to be? I mean, and where do you think that Nico Harrison has grown as a general manager? And is this a good thing with maybe with Cuban moving on and then Nico having the basketball control?
I think it's been the case, like even before Mark sold the team, I think he had a lot of faith, or you know, he had put a lot of power and had not been kind of meddling in front office stuff. I do think over the past probably, you know, at least since last summer, this has really been Nico's show. I think it's fair to say. And, you know, yeah, he has a very different vision of how to build a team than anybody who's ever run the front office in Dallas prior to this. And so, you know, I think that we're going to continue seeing him double down on the type of moves that he's made so far. I think that, you know, there's certainly some fortune mixed in there. I mean, the team had targeted Kyle Kuzma at the deadline. That was something that they wanted. You know, there's been a few things that they've been fortunate about, and, you know, notwithstanding, you know, just all of last season and the draft pick that would, you know, made it possible to get Derek Lively. But, you know, this is a team that is, you know, this is a front office that has a clear identity about how they want to build. And, you know, Nico's got a press conference on Friday, and I'm curious if, you know, he, you know, certainly going to ask him, you know, about what reflections he has from this series and if it changes anything. But I don't anticipate it. It does. I think the vision that he's been building the team is the one he's going to continue trying to build it with.
And Tim, and I'm just going to ask you the second part of my question was, in this press conference that we're going to hear from Nico, are we going to hear that how really banged up Luka was? It, you know, like in hockey, we always get that postseason press conference, and they tell us the guy had a broken leg or a broken foot, or, you know, he was dealing with something, and you're like, my God, that's amazing that he played. Are we going to get something like that from this?
I don't think so, actually. I think Luka's someone who, you know, anytime he would talk about his injuries, he would always say, you know, it's not an excuse. I'm out there. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to give details. And I think that is how he's wired, and I think it's something the franchise is going to honor. So to the extent he was banged up, you know, maybe there's some reporting about it before next season or even the next few weeks.
Right.
Certainly, you know, but I think it's his decision to disclose it or not disclose it. And he is mostly erred on the side of not disclosing it.
Not going to force you to relive the sound here, Tim, but I have definitely been called out for long questions before in my time. Your interaction with Jason Kidd, I'm just curious how that landed with you. And was there any conversations after the fact there?
Oh, no. I mean, it's not the first time I've asked a stupid question, and it won't be the last. I will say, not even really in my defense, just like Luka, this is an explanation about how it happened. This is not a defense. The mic had been given to somebody else, and in the postseason, there's this whole podium set up, and you're supposed to get a microphone, and you're called on by the NBA PR moderator, and the mic had been given to someone a row behind me. And it was actually supposed to go to me. And so a question had finished. I was kind of thinking through, and all of a sudden this mic gets handed to me, and I hadn't fully thought out what I was going to ask. You know, like in my head, I had like another couple minutes, and, you know, I just, you know, word salad. It was an awful question. You know, I had an idea of what I wanted to ask, but I hadn't figured out, And sometimes when we ask long questions, the idea is not to, you know, to establish all the cliches or the outs that the person is going to say, or you think the person might say. And if you say them already and then ask the question, you know, you might get an answer that's a little bit more focused on what you're actually looking for. But yeah, in that instance, I had not figured all that out. And it was, as Jason Kidd said, I think I can say this already. It was a long ass question. And
we fell for you, bro. So, we did.
Yeah. Not my finest work, but, you know, trust me, I've asked stupid questions all the time. And, you know, that doesn't happen that often, but I'm very desensitized to worrying too much about it.
We've kicked this around a little bit. Do you think the Mavericks, and I wonder your thoughts on this, want Luka to play in the upcoming Olympics?
I think that's a really hard question to answer. I think they want him to get healthy, and I think they want him to be happy and do what he feels he needs to do. And, you know, maybe secretly deep down, you know, there's going to be a tiny bit of relief if Slovenia doesn't qualify. Or, you know, and Luka really left open the possibility that he is not going to play. You know, I still think he's going to err on the side of trying, and if he's at all capable. But it's, you know, he's Luka. You know, it's not, they understand it's not in their control. And so, and nor will they ever try to control that aspect of him. And so kind of what they hope doesn't really matter. I think they just hope he's healthy, you know, by the time media day and preseason roll along. I think that's what they care about. However that actually plays out, they just want him to have time to recover and be healthy.
It's Tim Cato of The Athletic. Is there enough young talent on this team to bridge the gap with Lively, Hardy, Prosper, anybody else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lively changes everything. I mean, even the starters, the role players are not that old for the most part. You know, obviously this team is going to be moving on from Maxi Kleba in the next few seasons. You know, he is just getting to that point of in his career. The team certainly expects Kyrie Irving to, you know, be about this level for a couple more seasons, and then they'll have to reassess and see what's next. But I think, you know, I think the team is, I mean, the team just made it to the finals. Like, yes, they want some internal development and improvement from some of the, you know, the very few younger players they have. But I think realistically, and this is not sourced, but I think realistically, you look at a player like Josh Green and, you know, who has not developed all that much over the past couple of seasons, could develop more somewhere else, still is a young player. That might be someone you just have to part with if there's the right, you know, type of move. And, you know, I know that in the past there have been front offices who are big fans of his, you know, so it's starting to get to a point where you have to be realistic about, you know, what the team is, how quickly players can develop. You know, Omax Prosper is someone else who I think will fight and for a rotation spot next year. But, you know, at the same time, if he's playing very well and but isn't quite ready, isn't quite there. Even though Luka's 25, you're still on the time frame where you have to understand that, you know, he's not, you know, you can't just wait and wait and wait. You can't say in 2 years from now, Omax Prosper is going to be a starter. There's a little bit of urgency to this team, but there's also a baseline I think they've set in this finals run that, you know, I expect them to be very good next season. I expect them to go into the postseason, win a round or two. And, you know, that's as long as they maintain that. It's just about how do you take the step from, you know, really good team in the Western Conference who may not even make it to the conference finals every year because that's how good the West is. How do you make that next step? And I think that's what they're focused on right now, whatever it takes, whether it's development or moving prospects or just improvement around the edges that leaves the roster mostly intact.
Terrific insights once again, Tim. We can't thank you enough for this season of work, and we hope you enjoy the make the most out of your offseason.
Man, I'm trying. I've been doing expenses all day, so that's the other sign that the postseason is officially over. But I've enjoyed it all season with you guys, and looking forward to doing it again, you know, around free agency or something like that.
Thank you, Tim. Wonderful. There he goes, Tim Cato of The Athletic here with you on 105.3 The Fan. Up next is a top 10. We'll check. What do we got?
Yeah, in honor of Willie Mays, the top 10 Major League Baseball players of all time. Who's your number one? That's next in The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back, Nation. Segments brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. Franklin Frankel, the go-to attorneys for car and truck wrecks in DFW. If you or a loved one's been in an accident, contact the Frankels 214 or 817-333-3333. Go to frankelfirm.com. Now, here he is, Zach with an H, your Woolly Bully.
Let's talk top 10 baseball players of all time in honor of the late, great Willie Mays. But I do want to give a big happy birthday to Dirk, turning 46 today, of course, finals MVP, four-time All-NBA first team, 14-time All-Star, NBA 75th anniversary team. We got a Nowitzki way, baby. Number 41's retired, all-time leader in games, seasons, points, boards, blocks, field goals, free throws, you name it. He's a beast. And we love you, Dirk, forever and always. All right, let's talk the top 10 best baseball players of all time. We got a text in for the Mick. 817 giving their top 10 all time in no particular order. They're going Ted Williams, Sandy Koufax, Ernie Banks, Willie Mays, Barry Bonds, Nolan, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Stan Musial, Rogers Hornsby is going to be their top 10. Look, a lot of these guys, unfortunately, I didn't have the pleasure of being able to see.
Yeah.
Gone back and watched highlights and old clips. I mean, Willie Mays being one. You've probably been able to see a handful of these guys.
I really started understanding baseball when the Mets won in 69. That's kind of when I was starting to – I paid attention to the early A's of the 70s, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Brooks Robinson was a Baltimore Oriole that I watched. Saw Roberto Clemente play. Some great Yankee players. Reggie Jackson, Goose Gotch. I mean, they had I started really kind of doing that. So when you start to go back to Rogers Hornsby and Tress Speaker and Ty Cobb and those guys, we can't tell you much about those guys. But I could tell you about from those 1970s on to today, man, there are a lot of great players for sure.
And Roberto Clemente is an honorable mention on this list.
If he's an honorable mention, this must be a pretty damn impressive list.
Can Shohei Ohtani crack the top 10 already? Or?
He's not. No. Mike Trout is 14 on here, though.
Okay.
He's already getting his way close to the top 10.
Is he the only active player, I would imagine, that's in the conversation?
Yes. Trout is, now that Albert Pujols has retired, he is the only active player, I would say, that is anywhere close to the top 10 on this list. Randy Johnson, Ken Griffey Jr., and Pedro are all the guys that are just outside of the top 10 looking their way in. Number 10, we do have Mickey Mantle, New York Yankees. 2,415 hits, 536 homers, over 1,500 RBIs, 153 steals.
This is unfortunate because Mickey Mantle's career was ended because he was playing center field and stepped in a sprinkler hole and it wrecked his knee and they didn't know how to fix knees.
Oof. Oh man!
If he would have been playing in this day and age, they'd have been able to fix his knee, and they would have been able to keep playing and get even more stats. But yeah, he wrecked his knee stepping into a sprinkler hole.
My gosh, AL leader in home runs four times, and he had 18 home runs in the World Series alone.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Seven
switch hitter,
World
by the way. Switch hitter there, yeah.
Walter Johnson of the Washington Senators comes in at number nine.
Yeah, he would pitch games and they'd be losing and he'd still keep pitching. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he threw his last pitch in 1927.
They called him the train.
Yeah, I mean, played in a different era. His pitch counts, managing innings, that was not a thing. He holds the record for most career Ks.
Yeah.
20 more than the second closest pitcher. His velocity wouldn't seem like much today, but he was certainly viewed as the equivalent of a Jacob deGrom type during his era. 2.17 ERA, over 3,500 strikeouts, and a 1.06 whip.
I don't know. If you can't hit, I don't feel like you belong on this list.
So no pitchers in the top 10?
I'd do a completely different list for pitchers.
I would be okay with that, too.
Yeah.
Like, pitchers can just be separated. Number eight is Stan Musial of the St. Louis Cardinals. 3,630 hits, 475 homers. Stan the man.
Yeah.
Really could do anything. Greatest St. Louis Cardinal player ever, which they've got a long list of great ones.
Bob Gibson would like a word with you,
sir. I'm sure he would.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would.
Lou Brock was pretty darn good for them as well.
They have a laundry list of guys. Seven is Ted Williams, Boston Red Sox.
Splendid splinter.
Arguably one of the greatest pure hitters who ever lived.
Incredible eyesight.
Yeah, he wrote the book, The Science of Hitting.
Yeah.
But over 2,600 hits, 521 homers. Six is Lou Gehrig of the Yankees, the Iron Horse, Major League Baseball.
He had a deal where he struck out, he walked more than he struck out in his career.
Talk about lucky.
Damn. Yeah, that's crazy. Now, he was paired, of course, with Babe Ruth, but
Wally Pipped
was a stud. Yeah. Ty Cobb comes in at number five, nicknamed the Georgia Peach, hitting
racist
machine.
Yeah, racist.
Holds the MLB record for batting average, ranked second all time on the hit list, posted a .400 batting average.
Yeah.
Four is Barry Bonds, but some people might say I'm not putting Barry Bonds in there because of the steroid allegations, but Barry comes
in. He was a good player when he was skinny.
He was.
Most impressive stretch that I've ever seen.
When you watch him play for the Pittsburgh Pirates, he was him and a lot of others, Dave Parker, those guys, the Pirates had some cats. And when he was playing, skinny Barry Bonds was still a really, really good player.
Three, we've got Hank Aaron, recognized by many as still the true home run king.
Big Larry missed a foul ball that night.
Man.
The old Arlington Stadium. Hank Aaron.
Aaron atop Major League Baseball record books with most career RBIs, holds the all-time record for total bases, and he deserved to be called the home run king. Two is indeed the late, great Willie Mays, most famous for the catch, which we talked about earlier, and his spectacular play in the Polo Grounds. He deserves this recognition, 12 gold gloves, led the NL in home runs and steals four times.
Covered a lot of ground.
Best center fielder ever.
Yep.
Defense was incredible. Greatest outfielder maybe in MLB history. Just outstanding player. And number one, and I mean, I don't know. I think that you could definitely argue that we should flip these two. But number one is Babe Ruth with the Red Sox and the Yankees. I mean, he's got the pitching stats and the hitting stats. And the Sultan of SWAT posted Hall of Fame caliber numbers in his first five seasons with the Red Sox. And he gets traded to the Yankees. He had the curse of the Bambino. Would go on to be the best Major League Baseball player ever.
That might be Luca's idol, Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
He might have been like on a plane one day, hey, what's this movie, Babe? I'm going to watch it. And all of a sudden he's like,
beer and cigars?
Beer, cigar.
Bunch of tea. I mean, we went through.
Be the best ever at being just
Yeah. We went through his diet, what he was eating every day. I mean, the guy didn't sleep
either.
Like 4 a.m. the hot dogs, 10
hamburgers,
turkey sandwiches.
Yeah.
It's insane what Babe was putting down.
Yeah, easy to do that in baseball, I'd say. Heck of a list, and I think it holds. You know, his pitching exploits, he wasn't just a pitcher. He was a dang good pitcher.
He was a damn good pitcher.
Yeah.
He was.
Man, Johnny Bench, is he an honorable mention on that list?
Johnny Bench was, yeah.
Okay,
he was in the 20s.
Thank you.
In addition to the finest coming up next, Chief,
Beer, Bill, and Big Money next year in the nation.
All right, Sands is coming up at 6 o'clock tonight, pregame at 6:30 as the Rangers host the Mets, trying to get one from New York now before they leave. Holy cow, that was rough last night. A rim session coming up at 5 o'clock. We'll get the latest basketball. We'll talk Cowboys with you coming up at 5:20. Time now for an addition to the finest. Here's the Chief.
Okay, we have the new data on the team by team, stadium by stadium in the NFL most to least expensive beers.
I saw this and I was shocked.
Okay, so you've seen, how this plays out.
And I actually took a picture of all the prices. So I'm going to have to disqualify myself because I know who's number one.
Okay. Did you where were you expecting the Cowboys to fall on this? This is
I thought they would be top three, and they're not.
This season, the data reports that the smallest beer size at every stadium,
16 ounces is what we're talking about here.
Yes. The smallest that you'll find at a stadium is 14 and a half ounces.
Yeah.
And it goes from like anywhere from as low as just under $9 per beer, up to $9.76 on a pint to pint basis.
Yeah,
which is a 20-cent increase year over year. Mm. So they're saying, and I'm assuming this factors in the cost of the ticket, but I might be wrong here. They're saying that the 2023 NFL fan cost index rose by over 7% year over year, with a total cost of attendance at a league average of $631. So are they saying anybody who went to this game on average with ticket and concessions and everything, every person on average spent $600+? I'm assuming that's the ticket included.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely the tickets.
Okay, okay,
yeah.
So that's what it is, but parking? It is up a little bit. Yeah, parking, good call mm-hmm. on that.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Over $600 a fan?
Yeah. Per person.
Wow.
To just from start to finish go watch your team play. The NFL average cost for a 16-ounce beer is $9.56. Okay. So that's the average. Where do you expect the Cowboys to fall in here on expensive beers?
What did you say the average was?
Yeah, the average is $9.56.
The Cowboys are going to be on average.
The Cowboys are just slightly below average at $9.50 per 16 ounces. Yeah.
$9.50.
I thought they were going to be more expensive. Philadelphia is actually the most expensive beer in football.
Damn, I'd have guessed one of the L.A. teams.
Me too.
Because like Philadelphia is just so damn expensive.
Philadelphia went over $14 for a beer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Almost $15. Yeah.
Holy crap.
The Chargers and the Rams were tied, the Los Angeles teams, at $13.75 a pop.
Yes, there you have people that are used to paying exorbitant prices.
Yes.
I think here we don't get like rabid drunk fans a lot. We don't get in Philadelphia, that creates a high demand. You know, they can. You're going to charge whatever you can. And here there's just not enough people that need to have that beer compared to Philly.
If you did a thing just on average alcohol sales for a stadium, I'm going to guarantee you the Cowboys are number one. No, just
with all the
all
bars
alcohol
that they've got.
Margaritas. Yeah, the Maker's Mark, Tito's, all that stuff.
Yeah, the cocktails.
The cocktails. I guarantee you, the Cowboys, and I believe the Cowboys and the Packers are tied. Am I right about that?
Yeah, Cowboys and Packers are tied, yes, for the eighth most expensive beer.
Yeah. It surprised me that the Cowboys weren't in the top three. That
me
part,
too, yeah.
But if you said all alcohol sales for a stadium, I'm going to say the Cowboys are top three.
I bet they
easy
have more bars than any other stadium in football.
Well, they have dedicated areas, right? They have sponsorship. Yeah. They have they have various bar. We walked by it. We were going to the press box.
Yeah, I mean when we're doing the halftime, and then going back,
we look down
we're seeing like four different bars.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Chuck, if you go watch the Cowboys play the Steelers this season, you'll be paying $9.29 for a beer, ninth most in the sport. Detroit and Atlanta are the cheapest beers in football, $6.25.
Atlanta keeps doing it right.
Atlanta, we know, is doing that cheap concession deal, and I think it's really paid off for them. I think the numbers reflect that they're actually bringing home more because of it. But Detroit, it'll be interesting to see if they hold that line on being tied for the cheapest beer now that they are sort of a legit team. I think they've like really spiked up their prices for season tickets and stuff like that. So maybe next year Detroit will be climbing this list here with more expensive beers. That's just a guess. But right now it's them and the Falcons' cheapest beer in football.
I kind of find out that when you're looking at it too, that like, okay, the Broncos are down near the bottom at $7.50. The fact that Coors is brewed right there, you would kind of feel like that maybe that makes sense.
You're paying as much.
Yeah, like Green Bay, they've known for all those brews and stuff, Miller and all that in the southern part of the state. you would figure their beer would be cheaper too, because of the access that they have to it. But that's not the case at all, man. Just not the case.
Not the case at all. Well, we all speculated that, do you guys remember during the football season, that's what made it the funniest, sort of the weirdest part, but there was that Ring camera video of a shirtless gentleman leaving somebody's house, and it looked just like Bill Belichick doing like a early morning walk of shame. And we all joked that it was Belichick, but we all knew, like, of course it's not Belichick. That doesn't actually make any sense, even though it looks just like him. Well, it turns out that the Daily Mail and the New York Post are reporting that it absolutely is Bill Belichick the walk of shame ring cam video exiting the Massachusetts resident of his 24-year-old girlfriend, former cheerleader.
Okay, so she's
Jordan
now living
Hudson.
In Massachusetts, too.
Yeah.
That means this thing is getting serious.
She's not going to be living far from the money.
He was paying for her place.
I bet so.
Yeah, it's probably his spot.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
But here's the problem though. It's like, who's getting at, like, is she trying to clout chase with this? Releasing this ring cam footage? Like, who's the one that's getting their hands on the ring cam footage?
Let me ask you this,
dude. And outing shirtless
that doesn't
Belichick.
Make sense. This is, I think these outlets trying to just get out in front of this. They're trying to tie the two together, but there's no actual evidence or proof that that is her
Let
place.
Me ask you this. Does the ring...
Good question. It would have to be like one of those spots that you rent for the night, right?
Yeah. I think
Airbnb.
Like an Airbnb. Airbnb, yeah.
You're right. Why would she want to give away
that
footage?
Yeah. Bill, you need to clean it up. Yeah. That's a little sloppy.
This is like the summer home place is what we're doing here. This is not a real home. This is hanging out at the shore is what we're doing here. Yeah.
It's just hilarious, man. During football season. And this is now, the calendar had turned to November. You're approaching Thanksgiving. This is now what Jerry would refer to as the meat of the season. Bill Belichick, I guess,
I'm done here, man.
Well, they've already made, like, he'd already heard the whispers that they were moving on from him.
I don't have a damn quarterback.
Yeah,
I guess that's true.
That's his own fault.
I'm still as surprised today as I ever was in regards to that story. How about SMU, a school with 6,300 undergraduates?
Raising some money, huh?
$159 million for athletics last year,
dude,
as they moved to the ACC.
Didn't A&M had like around, 115?
Yeah. Yes, A&M had the most with $115 million. In the previous year.
Holy man.
And now you have SMU, where the M stands for money, money, money.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh. They're about to be big-time players in this game, dude. SMU going to the ACC, a little bit more respect. And now, with the amount of money that they're able to bring in NIL-wise,
it's perfect.
This is going to be a hotbed, dude.
I mean, the death penalty ruined them, but they were doing this before it became legal. Now it's legal. Now SMU can become great again.
Let the money flow, baby.
In the 1980s, they had one of the most intricate banking systems you could ever imagine in college football. My dad was amazed at how good they were doing it when they were battling them in the 70s and the 80s.
Pretty impressive.
Players. Oh, my dad's like, I wish we could do it this well. Yeah, seriously, they did a great job of covering all their tracks until a player turned them in. And a player that had nothing to do with anything, that it was not even a good player, which is terrible to say, but that's the guy that turned them in.
Well, add rookie quarterback for the Vikings, J.J. McCarthy, to the list of ball-throwing professionals that don't know how to throw a baseball.
Oh.
He did the opening pitch for the Twins game, and this was like 4 feet off the plate to the left. Like, the catcher didn't even attempt. He's like, this is way too far away here. It's embarrassing.
How does a guy that throws passes for a living not throw a baseball well at all?
Like, none of them have looked
good. Weird. I mean, we saw it with C.J. Stroud a few weeks ago. We saw it with Jaden Daniels. Now we're seeing it with J.J. McCarthy.
The feel, the ball, the
different
hand.
Technique.
Complete, yes. Thrower. Like, just look athletic here. You know,
like Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick, those guys were throwing it like about 90 miles an hour.
Those guys are
baseball guys.
Okay. You don't know what the baseball
background
is.
Well, then let's get baseball guys to do this then, I guess.
If you're a promotions team, are you intentionally looking for a guy that's going to make an ass out of himself?
Yes.
Go viral.
But every time you take a quarterback, I mean, now we're understanding what the narrative is around these guys, and maybe that's the bit now. We know these quarterbacks can't really do it, and you can go viral. But you would think getting a professional athlete who's used to throwing a ball, even though it's a completely different ball, you would think that's a guy that would actually show up and be somewhat impressive.
I'll tell you, the basketball ladies were throwing the ball well. They had three of them out there the other day, I think in Chicago, that were throwing the ball very well.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, they got some gals that can throw.
Well, I think C.J. Stroud has really saved these guys, though. Because remember, C.J. Stroud botching the S2 test. Oh, my gosh. What does that mean for quarterbacks? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, we stopped talking about that.
Now we know that he is a stud. C.J. Stroud, we saw just a few weeks ago throwing a terrible baseball. Mm-hmm. But we already know he's a good quarterback. So we can't hold this against any of these quarterbacks of like, what does this mean for his career? Because we just saw C.J. Stroud have an incredible rookie season. He can't throw a baseball worth a lick.
Totally different technique. Take it for granted, I think.
Absolutely. I think the 88 guys did it pretty well. Weren't they out there last night at the Rangers, Pearson and Irvin?
Yeah, sure
they didn't
did.
Make fools of themselves.
Not at all.
They're old school guys.
Yeah.
From that generation, everybody played baseball.
They played out in the front yard every day. Yeah.
Okay, we got a rim session coming up next. Little hoop, Chief.
Yeah, we might have a Mavs super team brewing. That's next here in the nation.
All right, Sands is coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. Pregame at 6:30 as the Rangers host the Mets, trying to get one from New York now before they leave. Holy cow, that was rough last night. A rim session coming up at 5 o'clock. We'll get the latest basketball. We'll talk Cowboys with you coming up at 5:20. Time now for an edition of the Finest. Here's the Chief.
Okay, we have the new data on the team-by-team, stadium-by-stadium in the NFL most to least expensive beers.
I saw this, and I was shocked.
Okay, so you've seen, this plays out.
And I actually took a picture of all the prices. So I'm going to have to disqualify myself because I know who's number one.
Okay. Were you expecting the Cowboys to fall on this?
I thought they would be top three, and they're not.
This season, the data reports that the smallest beer size at every stadium,
16 ounces is what we're talking about here.
Yes. The smallest that you'll find at a stadium is 14 and a half ounces.
Yeah.
And it goes from like anywhere from as low as just under $9 per beer, up to $9.76 on a pint to pint basis.
Yeah,
which is a 20-cent increase year over year. Mm. So they're saying, and I'm assuming this factors in the cost of the ticket, but I might be wrong here. They're saying that the 2023 NFL fan cost index rose by over 7% year over year, with a total cost of attendance at a league average of $631. So are they saying anybody who went to this game on average with ticket and concessions and everything, every person on average spent $600+? I'm assuming that's the ticket included.
Yeah, it's absolutely the tickets.
Okay, so that's what it is, but
parking?
It is up a little bit. Yeah, parking, good call mm-hmm. on that.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Over $600 a fan?
Yeah, yeah. Per person.
Wow.
To just from start to finish go watch your team play. The NFL average cost for a 16-ounce beer is $9.56. Okay. So that's the average. Where do you expect the Cowboys to fall in here on expensive beers?
What did you say the average was?
Yeah, the average is $9.56.
The Cowboys are going to be on average.
The Cowboys are just slightly below average at $9.50 per 16 ounces.
$9.50.
I thought they were going to be more expensive. Philadelphia is actually the most expensive beer in football.
Damn, I'd have guessed one of the LA teams.
Me too.
Philadelphia is just so damn expensive.
Philadelphia went over $14 for a beer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Almost $15. Yeah.
Holy crap.
The Chargers and the Rams were tied, the Los Angeles teams, at two at $13.75 a pop.
Yes, there you have people that are used to paying exorbitant prices.
Yes.
I think here we don't get like rabid drunk fans a lot. We don't get in Philadelphia, that creates a high demand. You know, they can. You're going to charge whatever you can. And here there's just not enough people that need to have that beer compared to Philly.
If you did a thing just on average alcohol sales for a stadium, I'm going to guarantee you the Cowboys are number one. No, just
with all the
all
bars
alcohol
that they've got.
Margaritas. Yeah, the Maker's Mark, Tito's, all that stuff.
Yeah, the cocktails.
The cocktails. I guarantee you, the Cowboys, and I believe the Cowboys and the Packers are tied. Am I right about that?
Yeah, Cowboys and Packers are tied, yes, for the eighth yeah. I guess, the eighth most expensive Damn. Beer.
Yeah. It surprised me that the Cowboys weren't in the top three.
Me
part,
too. Yeah.
But if you said all alcohol sales for a stadium, I'm gonna say the Cowboys are top
I
three.
I bet they
easy.
Have more bars than any other stadium in football.
Well, they have dedicated areas, right? They have sponsorship. Yeah. They have they have various bar. If we walk by it, we were going to the press box.
Yeah. I mean, when we're doing the halftime, yeah. and then going back, we're seeing like four different bars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Chuck, if you go watch the Cowboys play the Steelers this season, you'll be paying $9.29 for a beer, Oof. Ninth most in the sport. Detroit and Atlanta are the cheapest beers in football, $6.25.
Atlanta now, keeps doing it right.
Atlanta, yeah. we know, is doing yeah. that cheap concession deal, and I think it's really paid off for them. I think the numbers reflect that they're actually bringing home more because of it. But Detroit, it'll be interesting to see if they hold that line on being tied for the cheapest beer now that they are sort of a legit team. I think they've like really spiked up their prices for season tickets and stuff like that. So maybe next year Detroit will be climbing this list here with more expensive beers. That's just a guess. But right now it's them and the Falcons' cheapest beer in football.
I kind of find out that when you're looking at it too, that like, okay, the Broncos are down near the bottom at $7.50. The fact that Coors is brewed right there. You would kind of feel like that maybe that okay that makes sense.
You're if you're paying as much,
yeah. Like Green Bay, they've known for all those brews and stuff. You know, Miller and all that in the southern part of the state. You would figure their beer would be cheaper too, because of the access that they have to it. But that's not the case at all, man. Just not the case.
Not the case at all. Well, we all speculated that. Do you guys remember? During the football season, that's what made it the funniest, sort of the weirdest part, but there was that Ring camera video of a shirtless gentleman leaving somebody's house, and it looked just like Bill Belichick doing like a early morning walk of shame. And we all joked that it was Belichick, but we all knew, like, of course it's not Belichick. That doesn't actually make any sense, even though it looks just like him. Well, it turns out that the Daily Mail and the New York Post are reporting that it absolutely is Bill Belichick the walk of shame ring cam video exiting the Massachusetts resident of his 24-year-old girlfriend. Former cheerleader.
Okay, so she's
Jordan
now living
Hudson.
In Massachusetts too.
Yeah,
that means this thing is getting serious.
She's not going to be living far from the money.
He was paying for her place.
I bet so.
Yeah, it's probably his spot.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
But here's the problem though. It's like, who's getting at? Like, is she trying to clout chase with this? Releasing this ring cam footage? Like, who's the one that's getting their hands on the ring cam footage?
Let me ask you this.
And outing shirtless
walks
playing
Bill
Belichick.
That doesn't make sense. This is, I think these outlets trying to just get out in front of this, they're trying to tie the two together, but there's no actual evidence or proof that that is her
place. Let me ask you this. Does the ring...
Good question. It would have to be like one of those spots that you rent for the night, right?
Yeah. I think
Airbnb.
Yes.
Yeah. You're right. Why would she want
to
give away that
footage? Yeah. Bill, you need to clean it up. That's a little sloppy.
This is like the summer home place is what we're doing here. This is not a real home. This is hanging out at the shore is what we're doing here. Yeah.
That's just hilarious, man. During football season. And this is now the calendar had turned to November. You're approaching Thanksgiving. This is now what Jerry would refer to as the meat of the season.
He knew.
Bill Belichick, I guess, he already knew.
Well, they've already made, like, he'd already heard the whispers that they were moving on from it.
I don't have a damn quarterback.
Yeah,
I guess that's true.
That's his own fault.
I'm still as surprised today as I ever was in regards to that story. How about SMU, a school with 6,300 undergraduates
raising some money, huh?
$159 million for athletics last year,
dude.
As they moved to the ACC,
didn't A&M had like around what 115?
Yes, A&M had the most with $115 million. In the previous year.
Holy
man.
And
now you have SMU, where the M stands for money, money, money.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh. They're about to be big-time players in this game, dude. SMU going to the ACC. A little bit more respect. And now with the amount of money that they're able to bring in NIL-wise,
it's perfect.
This is going to be a hotbed, dude.
I mean, the death penalty ruined them, but they were doing this before it became legal. Now it's legal. Now SMU can become great again.
Let the money flow, baby.
In the 1980s, they had one of the most intricate banking systems you could ever imagine in college football. My dad was amazed at how good they were doing it when they were battling them in the 70s and the 80s.
Pretty impressive.
Players. Oh, my dad's like, I wish we could do it this well. Yeah, seriously, they did a great job of covering all their tracks until a player turned them in. Ugh. And a player that had nothing to do with anything that it was not even a good player, which is terrible to say, but that's the guy that turned them in.
Well, add rookie quarterback for the Vikings, J.J. McCarthy, to the list of ball-throwing professionals that don't know how to throw a baseball.
Oh.
He did the opening pitch for the Twins game, and this was like 4 feet off the plate to the left. Like the catcher didn't even attempt. He's like, way too far away here.
How does a guy that throws passes for a living not throw a baseball well at all?
Like, none of them look
it's weird.
Good.
I mean, we saw it with C.J. Stroud a few weeks ago. We saw it with Jaden Daniels. Now we're seeing it with J.J. McCarthy.
Different, the feel, the ball, in
different
the
technique.
Complete. Yes. Thrower. Like, just look athletic here. You know,
like Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick, those guys were throwing it like about 90 miles an hour.
Those guys are baseball guys.
Okay. You don't know what the baseball
background
is.
Well, then let's get baseball guys to do this then, I guess.
If you're a promotions team, are you intentionally looking for a guy that's going to make an ass out of himself?
Yes.
Go viral?
But every time you take a quarterback, I mean, now we're understanding what the narrative is around these guys, and maybe that's the bit now. We know these quarterbacks can't really do it, and you can go viral, but you would think getting a professional athlete who's used to throwing a ball, even though it's a completely different ball, you would think that's a guy that would actually show up and be somewhat impressive.
I tell you, the basketball ladies were throwing the ball well. They had three of them out there the other day, I think in Chicago, that were throwing the ball very well.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, they got some gals that can throw.
Well, I think C.J. Stroud has really saved these guys, though, because remember, C.J. Stroud botching the S2 test. Oh, my gosh. What does that mean for quarterbacks? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, we stopped talking about that.
Now we know that he is a stud. C.J. Stroud, we saw just a few weeks ago throwing a terrible baseball, mm-hmm. but we already know he's a good quarterback. So we can't hold this against any of these quarterbacks of like, what does this mean for his career? Because we just saw C.J. Stroud have an incredible rookie season. He can't throw a baseball worth a lick.
Totally different technique. Take it for granted, I think.
Absolutely. I think the 88 guys did it pretty well. Weren't they out there last night at the Rangers, Pearson and Irvin?
Yeah, sure
they didn't
did.
Make fools of themselves.
Not at all.
They're old school guys.
Yeah.
From that generation, played baseball.
They played out in the front yard every day. Yeah.
Okay, we got a rim session coming up next. Little hoop, Chief.
Yeah, we might have a Mavs super team brewing. That's next here in the nation.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.